Welcome back to another episode of the District Wasteland. I'm your host, Joe Loudguy. I hate being yelled at for things I don't control. Today, I got reamed out by my boss, and it was a stark reminder of why working under an owner capitalist model is fucking awful and, like, really demeaning and dehumanizing at times. It was something I had zero control over because it was another member of my department who had input into it. And they themselves had no control over it, because while they had input, you know, they were waiting on another company that we work with to get the job done. So none of this matters so much to you, dear listener, and we'll be covering an article or two that I found interesting, as per the usual, but I felt like mentioning that I don't like being yelled at about things that I can't control. Stay tuned for me to explain why capitalism sucks at times. Now, I know that we all have times where things suck. Things have sucked for me a lot recently. I got chewed out last Friday, this past Tuesday, and now again today. So that's like an every 2 day chew out in the work week. And that's not cool. Nobody likes that. A lot of people would probably say go find another job. But, you know, I mean, applying to jobs is already a huge pain in the ass. Never hearing back is hugely demoralizing. But more than all of those things, nobody's hiring. It's like the middle of a pandemic recession. You know, the job market is completely dried up. Everybody's looking for the amount of out-of-work people looking for jobs is insane. Like, it's a fucking buyer's market at this point, you know, or seller's market, whatever it is. The guys that are hiring, it's their market. And so on one hand, I should be really grateful, I suppose, that I have a job, even if it isn't like a great one, and that they're willing to, you know, keep me on staff. I'm working 5 hours a day, basically. So 25 hours a week. It's not a lot of money, but it's more money than zero. Maybe I should be grateful for that. But, you know, when you're the lowest member of a totem pole at a company, all the shit rolls down to you. All, like, I got chewed out by the owner today. And, you know, for something that he was understandably frustrated about, he was concerned about a client of ours that had been harassing him, and they feel they've waited too long for their product. And I'm not entirely against their feelings on this. After all, it is mid-May, and a lot of these photographs we took were in mid to early March. So, you know, 2 months during a pandemic, I would hope people would understand the delays, but nonetheless, when it's one of your biggest clients, you feel the pressure. And I was the only one in my department that was actually in the office today. The others were at home because we're on a work-from-home protocol. And the others were the ones that have the most direct control over this client, its job, and how it gets processed. So I had zero input into that. I just happened to be in the office to get other unrelated work done, and I got chewed out for work that I had no input into. And considering it came off the back of being chewed out just 2 days prior and being requested that by tomorrow, I have a description on what it is that I do with my day so I can, like, compartmentalize my time and be more effective, which was the request I had from Tuesday. Basically, I am in a situation where I kind of want to just say fuck it and not do it because I'm tired of having to justify my work to people. Like, I was there at the office to get work done. Yes, it's unrelated to, you know, what you're saying or what you're complaining about, but there is 200 plus clients we have to deal with on any given day, and I help a certain percentage of them to get what they need, and that's what I do. And having to walk through, like, when you ask me to say it out loud, what do? Well, you answer emails. Like, oh, anybody can answer emails. But can anybody answer emails? Like, I know where all of our files are located. I know how to process the client's request to get them the item they're looking for and how to do it without messing up our system. So I kind of feel like there's a certain skill set that goes into this that you can't just let anyone do. So when you shrug and say anyone can do that, again, my feeling is that it is a job and someone has to do it and you're not doing it. And that says something. right? Like when an owner is not willing to do the thing that you're doing, it means that your job is vital to the company, but too shitty for them to want to do it themselves, right? It's not like for them to go like, oh, I could do it if I wanted to, but I'm so busy. I have other things to do, other more important things. Well, that's great and all. You know, I'm happy for you that you're so busy in the world, but you hired me to accomplish a task. And it's just a stark reminder of why this I don't even want to call it disproportionate power, because that's frankly a disservice to the word disproportionate. It's really no power. The power dynamic that I have is I have no power and everyone above me has all the power. So, you know, it's underselling it, frankly, to say disproportionate. That system is whack. You know, I am as much a human being with as much of an input into a company or into a product as anybody else. And this idea that because I am hired to do a job, I also have to eat shit whenever the people with more power than me feel like making me eat shit, that idea to me is ridiculous. I mean, it is crazy that we tolerate it to the degree that we do. Americans just have so much patience for having shit poured on them on any given day. Like, the audacity of an adult to chew you out is already stunning. Like, people would be a lot more polite, let me put it this way, if they didn't feel like they had this disequal power dynamic going. It's not nice feeling owned. It's really, really not, you know? Having no power to push. I mean, this honestly, and it's also what opens up abuses. I mean, this is a little unrelated. It's not like I've been abused, but it's the fact that we have to deal with people above us who have this disproportionate amount of power compared to our position. And if there is the opening for abuse, they will abuse it. That's the thing, is you leave these openings for them to abuse their power. Like being chewed out, being able to pay someone only $15 an hour with no benefits. Like being able to do these things is a part of the problem. It should be a vote. Everything that goes on in an organization should be a vote. At least as far as I can see, more democracy is a good thing. In any situation, the more democracy you have, the better off you're going to be. And again, if you've been listening to me or to really any kind of progressive lefty, none of this is that radical. And a lot of it is, you know, just related to me and my experiences today. So it's not like any of this is groundbreaking, but it's just a stark reminder, you know, like you get it thrown in your own face and you have to be reminded yet again that you're at the bottom of the totem pole. You don't have any power. Everything you do is disposable and undervalued. You know, that is capitalism. Everything is commodified. So the Hill today, we got Joe Biden. We're in the middle of a pandemic that has cost us more than 85,000 jobs as of today. Lives of millions of jobs, lives of millions of people, millions of jobs. So that's the quote that we got from Biden today. I mean, again, you know, Joe Biden is losing his mind. His brain is breaking. Both him and Donald Trump are delusional, mentally deficient old men. And it's a shame. We really, I feel like Trump is very beatable, frankly. Like he has incumbency, but his handling of the coronavirus has been pretty dismal. And a competent speaker, a competent leader could easily run against this guy. But even if they did run against him, I'm honestly beginning to think that Trump would have beaten Bernie. Like I'm beginning to believe that just like what happened in the UK, with Jeremy Corbyn, even just winning, you know, becoming the head of labor, even just gaining that power, becoming the Democratic nominee is not enough, because it seems like capital is just completely unwilling to let us vote away their wealth. And I don't know what I was expecting. You know, that's something we've talked about for years, but I guess I wanted to believe otherwise. I wanted to believe electoralism was a path out of this because it seems like the only option we have on the table. So we might as well invest everything we have into it. As Chomsky has pointed out, you know, going out in the streets and, you know, firing your gun into the air to show your rebellion against the state is a good way to die. but it's not a particularly effective way to implement change. So all of our other options for saving the planet, I mean, we're running out. We're running out of options at this point. Running out of options to save the planet, to save millions of people, to recapture some element of freedom in a society that is having the freedom beaten out of it day in and day out. You know, I mean, it's kind of dismal to see the options that are on the table. I mean, I've talked at length about my own depression after Bernie dropped out of the race because it's just that bad. You know, things really, like the fact that Joe Biden is the one that gets through the filter of all of the Democratic contenders, he's the one that goes the distance, is stunning. And it shows you the kind of power and kingmakery that goes on behind the scenes. He is a part of the neoliberal corporate establishment. And the fact that he has a mental slip up about millions of jobs, as opposed to millions of people, it's very clear. Well, on the other hand, he is kind of dementia-ridden. That honestly might have just been, you know, a gaffe brought about by his decaying brain. Nonetheless, I do think it's quite poignant apropos that the mental slip would be jobs instead of people. Because that's what we care about in this country. We care about employment rates. We care about how much people are working to make the wealth of the billionaires, who have also benefited tremendously from the coronavirus. And I'm going to go into an article right now on that point because it really is pathetic and sad. And it's a reminder of why we fight, honestly, that we have to take on people that want us to be economically enslaved. And this is from May 8th on fastcompany.com. The eight richest Americans just made $6.2 billion in a single day. Amid the coronavirus pandemic, more than 33 million Americans have lost their jobs. But the stock market's latest boom is creating a lot of wealth for people at the top. Unemployment in the United States is now at a record high as the coronavirus pandemic continues. To say record high really is underselling what it's at. It's like not a record high. It is earth-shatteringly high. Like, we're talking about the amount of people filing for unemployment breaking off the charts, like it orders of magnitude greater than it's ever been. So yes, I would say unemployment is at a record high. At the same time, the stock market is up from its lows at the start of the crisis. And so people who own a lot of stock are feeling the opposite effect. They are making a lot of money. In just one day, the eight richest men in America have seen their wealth increase by a combined $6.2 billion for a total of $653 billion. Ugh. The numbers come from the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, a daily ranking of the world's richest people, which is updated with new figures at the close of each trading day in New York. They were shared by Warren Gunnels, a senior advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders, in a tweet. Gunnels listed the eight richest Americans' individual gains in descending order. At the top of the list is Mark Zuckerberg, whose wealth is up $1 billion in just one day, followed by Larry Page, $956 million, Bill Gates, up $931 million, Sergey Brin, $919 million, Jeff Bezos, $907 million, Larry Ellison, $634 million, Warren Buffett, up $429 million, and Steve Ballmer, up $353 million. According to the most recent monthly report by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which came out on Friday, 20.5 million Americans lost their jobs in April. That month's unemployment rate was 14.7%, the highest on record in the post-World War II era. The peak unemployment rate during the height of the Great Depression was 24.9% in 1933. By 1941, the year of Pearl Harbor, unemployment was down to 9.9%. Nearly 3.2 million people applied for unemployment benefits just last week, according to Time. And since the COVID-19 pandemic began, about 33.5 million Americans have lost their jobs. That the stock market is now up despite these losses seems paradoxical, or the height of dissonance between Wall Street and reality. Since the March 23 stock market low, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the NASDAQ Composite have each bounced back more than 30%. Though the S&P 500 and the Dow are both still down since the start of the year. But just as Jack Janowitz, a portfolio strategist at Natixis investment managers noted to Bloomberg, the market isn't the economy. The companies and individuals that are profiting during the pandemic largely rely on automation and tech innovations that work in a remote world. An April report from the Institute for Policy Studies found that despite some initial hits to high net worths when the market dropped at the beginning of the coronavirus crisis, billionaires' wealth rebounded quickly. Over 3 weeks when the first blows of the pandemic impact hit the American public and 22 million people lost their jobs, American billionaires' total wealth increased about 10%, or $282 billion, more than it was at the beginning of March, for a combined net worth of $3.229 trillion. I mean, like, what could that money do? What could that money do for the people of this country? If we spent $3.229 trillion on combating the coronavirus spread, all of us would be infinitely better off. It's unbelievable. What a waste, a colossal misdirection of resources this is. I mean, goodness gracious, people are out here dying, and I'm just explaining and charting the wealth of how people who literally sit on their asses all day, and it's literally talks about it. It says, oh, you know, most of them have tech and innovation and automation that obviously benefits in a remote world. So what you're telling me is that because they don't physically need people, they're going to make infinite amounts of money that they don't have to give to anyone else. They don't have to help with. It's insufferable. It's unbelievable. Those disparities are only continuing, as Gunnell's tweet shows. Chuck Collins, director of the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies and co-author of that April report, noted to Fast Company in an email that over the last 7 weeks, billionaire wealth has gone up $371.2 billion, an increase of over 12.5%. Some of the richest billionaires are now even richer this year than they were in 2019, before COVID-19 caused any concerns in the U.S. Quote, our report really touched a nerve, indicating an undercurrent of alarm and anger that America's billionaires are not just social distancing, but economically distancing. What I find troubling is that billionaires winning so big alongside pandemic profiteering undermines our national sense of solidarity, the unity we need to get through this nightmare and resume our lives. I mean, there you go, you know. When you allow the kind of power dynamics that we tolerate in our economy, the wealthiest in this country are going to be able to basically write themselves checks. They can write themselves checks for up to $3 trillion off of money and services that they ostensibly provide, but things that we could just as easily communally own. Democratic socialism, communism, whatever you want, the idea is that we need to democratically distribute power, like the actual power over how the money is decided and spent. And that is something we do not have any of in this country. I mean, that is disgusting to read an article like that and to see how powerful the wealthy have become in a time when we are being told to go back to work to help them. We're being told to go back to work to help the economy so it doesn't collapse. Even if we die, like, we have to go to work to basically sacrifice ourselves for the greater good. Kill yourself for the Dow Jones. And of course, in more bad news, if you have been paying attention to the Ed Markey versus Joe Kennedy race, you'll be thoroughly depressed and disheartened to know that it is not going well. Now, this article is from April 8th, so it's about a month old, but things have only gotten worse since then, so nothing I'm saying here isn't going to be already painful enough, let's say. So the deadly coronavirus crisis has upended the marquee U.S. Senate race of Joe Kennedy III versus incumbent Ed Markey, but only one candidate is keeping on top, Kennedy. With the September 1st primary coming up quickly, Markey has been outmaneuvered at every turn by the younger, more nimble, and more socially media adept Democratic challenger. Markey, already behind in the polls, is in danger of falling further behind and hasn't even obtained the required number of signatures to get on the ballot, a potential crisis point for his campaign. Markey's campaign was built on winning delegates at local caucuses, getting the state party convention endorsement, and building momentum toward the primary. His campaign was heavy on paid field organizers and building grassroots support. The coronavirus crisis turned that strategy into a major blunder. Markey did end up winning a majority of delegates, but there is no convention. It was canceled because of COVID-19, and no one cares that Markey would have won it. Oh, this is depressing. This is so painful. And the problem with relying on field organizing, a specialty of campaign manager John Walsh, is that reaching out to voters during the coronavirus pandemic has proved difficult. Without door-to-door campaigning, Markey has had to rely on digital campaigning. Walsh, who was paid $94,000 for just 4 months' work last year, did not return a call from the Herald. While the way our campaign operates has shifted a lot lately, we're not taking our foot off the gas, Team Markey wrote in his latest campaign email. No mention of the fact that the campaign is struggling to get enough signatures to win a spot on the ballot. No mention of Markey's fundraising troubles. Markey has tried to keep up with Kennedy's social media presence, but has largely failed. His last Markey on the Mic podcast drew only a few dozen listeners. His digital town halls draw a few thousand, including one with Jane Fonda, but Kennedy's Facebook Live check-ins can get up to 1 million views. By the way, could you get someone even older and less relevant than Jane Fonda? Oh my God. Again, this is from the Boston Herald, so like, you're free to vomit. This is like a garbage trash rag of a lead, so of course they prefer Joe Kennedy. People are worried about their jobs and their futures, and he's talking climate change with Hanoi Jane. Holy shit. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is painful. Kennedy, with his significant family name advantage, has officially suspended his campaign activities, including fundraising, but unofficially, he hasn't stopped at all. The Newton congressman has kept a busy schedule of live Facebook broadcasts, daily check-ins with his telegenic family, and special evening broadcasts with well-known co-hosts like celebrity chefs, medical experts, and children's authors. Yes, Kennedy's check-ins with his two kids can be hokey, but his broadcasts can be information-packed and urgent, something Markey can't match. And if Markey can't even get his signatures to reach the ballot, there won't be any contest at all. I mean, this is... it's disgusting. It's disgusting to see that side of the elites. Like, they're just like, yeah, no, he's an old name. He's cool. Markey's old. And, you know, Markey, he's so old news. Nobody even pay attention to him. And then, of course, the Boston Magazine had this to say today. And this is a quote from Joe Kennedy. With due respect to Senator Markey, who is a good man, there's more to this job than the way you vote and the bills that you file. Joe Kennedy III wants you to know he's more than just a name. And this is a quote from the article. Reaching the vehicle, Kennedy turned toward Bowen and responded, or an excerpt from the article. There is an awful lot of opportunity that comes with being a senator from Massachusetts, he said. And with due respect to Senator Markey, who is a good man, there's more to this job than the way you vote and the bills that you file. It comes with an ability to leverage that platform to address the issues we're talking about. And with due respect to the senator, if you're not going to leverage that now, given what is at stake for the Democratic Party, for the values that we hold dear in our Commonwealth that have been targeted by this administration literally from day one, if you're not doing it now, then when? Again, what the hell does that even mean? Like, literally, what the hell? That was just like, I mean, I saw a comment, actually, that was tweeted that I think pretty much captures the heart of that excerpt. And it's basically just Pete Buttigieg, right? You know, it's a winding nonsense Pete Buttigieg claim. Somebody said he's JFK, but with no game, you know? Like, and you know, I mean, that's, he's just going for that same neoliberal, you know, talk, you know, big, proudly, but ultimately what you're saying is corporatism good, because Ed Markey has a great voting record. Like, he is a good progressive senator, is one of the few that we actually have. And so this is basically, as far as I can tell, this is the wolves coming for the progressives. Like, they're going to take Ed Markey's seat and give it to a staunch corporatist, a Kennedy, which have been, you know, one of the power elite families of the last century. And of course, they continue to find their way into the halls of power. And when you have someone who's willing to say something that empty, it's very jarring. It's very, very jarring to hear somebody say something that has no point to it. Like, you know, just because you voted well and you've got these bills filed, it doesn't mean that you're doing everything you can as a senator. Because senators have a lot of power and you need to use that power. And if you aren't using it, then I can't see if you'll ever use it correctly, Ed. You're a good man, but, like, I mean, what did you just say there? Like, the way he voted is great. The bills he's filed have been great. But that isn't all there is to the job. You have to leverage the position of the job, but then you go into no description of how to leverage it. It's just bullshit. It's just bullshit, the same you'd hear from Pete Buttigieg. Ed Markey co-sponsored the Green New Deal. You know, like this is, it's depressing. You know, it's that you couple this with what we covered earlier, and it's pretty depressing to have all this corporate old money power just showing its hand right now and getting away with it. They're getting away with showing their hand. The abuses that they are able to wield on the economy to direct all this these resources and this wealth to them, while people are still struggling to get face masks, while nurses are literally dying daily. Like, the people on the front lines of the pandemic are dying daily, and they're dying because we are overworking them and our medical response apparatus is just not able to handle what we're putting it through. Because, I mean, there was always going to be a pandemic. I tell this to literally everybody. It's like, pandemics, these kind of things happen like every century, but they happen. Like, you can be aware, like a tornado or a volcano or any kind of natural disaster, that there is going to be some kind of disaster, that there is going to be something that destroys all of your infrastructure, and you need to be prepared for that. How tough you make that infrastructure to be prepared for that moment, that matters. And there's a lot you can do that we have not done any of, you know? Like, making our economy as brutal as possible with as few safety nets as possible was not a far-sighted plan. It's the kind of thing you do if you are a corrupt oligarchy. And I was really hoping that after Bernie dropped out, maybe the just sheer rage at how the billionaires are getting wealthier all the time and the corrupt oligarchs screwed us in the election, I was really hoping that would motivate some kind of response from people, but I really don't see it. I don't see the kind of outrage anymore. And I don't know how to fix that. You know, I have podcasts like this where I try to educate people and try to get them ready to go out and volunteer. By the way, you can definitely volunteer to help out Ed Markey. He does need people to call for him. If you want to go ahead and do that, you know, I support it. I probably should as well, frankly. And this is just, you know, I mean, this is what it is. We have to keep fighting. It's depressing. This news is depressing, but it's also good to know it. People are still reporting on it. You know, there is still a fight going on. And we can, if we band together, bring some real change, I think. But as of right now, you know, obviously a lot of great opportunities have passed us by, we'll say. And, you know, we're going to move on from Joe Kennedy, but just in case you aren't really aware of why Joe Kennedy sucks, this is an article from Boston Magazine, I guess, back in the day, or Boston, what is this? Boston.com. Ugh, Jesus, it's just Boston.com. Okay. Joe Kennedy III says his vote on a nuclear weapons proposal was an honest mistake. Quote, why on earth, end quote, did the Massachusetts Democrat join Republicans to vote in favor of new nuclear weapons funding for Donald Trump? Well, it turns out that wasn't his intent. Oh, okay. Last week, Representative Joe Kennedy joined Republicans to vote in favor of fulfilling the request President Donald Trump's administration made for millions of dollars to start work on a new nuclear weapon. That, I mean, the fact that I have to say that out loud really is already awful. That we're building a new nuclear, we already have the world's biggest nuclear arsenal. There's no point to it. It was an odd vote, especially given how Kennedy has consistently and prominently opposed the Trump administration, how he recently spoke out against the president's narrative of nuclear brinksmanship, and how Massachusetts Democrats have backed legislation to restrict Trump's ability to use nuclear weapons. Sure, Kennedy has issues on which he departs from the party line, but nuclear proliferation hasn't appeared to be one of them. That's because, according to the third-term congressman, the vote was a, quote, mistake. Oh, my God. And again, coming from the same guy who said that the more you – or what was his quote? Hold on. It was there's more to this job than the way you vote and the bills that you file. Oh, yeah. This dude's absolute scum, man. Please do not let this guy win. Like, we've lost so much. Do we really have to lose a decent senator to this corporate suit? All right, I'm going to move on to this sex trafficking story. Let me pull that up. So moving on from the rich and powerful abuses down to just the powerful abusing their power, we have ICE agents fight sex trafficking by paying potential victims for handjobs. This is an article by Reason. In Operation, quote, Operation Asian Touch, end quote, federal agents coerce suspected human trafficking victims into sex acts. Local cops seized money and threw them in jail. Agents with the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, in Arizona have been fighting, quote-unquote, human trafficking by sending federal immigration agents to coerce suspected victims into paid sex acts. These acts were later used by authorities to justify arresting women who agreed to them, seizing their assets, and telling the press it was these women who were the real predators. Oh, already I hate this article. Federal agents had at least 17 sexual encounters with, quote, Asian females, end quote, working in massage parlors around Mohave County, Arizona, over a five-month period in 2018, according to new research from the Howard Center for Investigative Journalism at Arizona State University, ASU. Internal ICE documents show these activities had the blessing of agents' supervisors. Of course they did. When it was all over, the years-long operation yielded three misdemeanor charges stemming from a single sexual encounter which authorities interrupted during a raid. Absurd and horrifying? Obviously, but also a scenario that is far from an isolated incident. Quote, Operation Asian Touch, end quote. The Mohave County investigation dubbed Operation Asian Touch exclusively targeted Asian massage businesses and spas. Police from Bullhead City and Lake Havasu City began the investigation in 2016 after allegedly receiving reports that some employees at these businesses would provide erotic extras along with back and foot rubs. Local cops decided these businesses were likely human trafficking fronts after learning that all of the masseuses were Asian women, according to a Homeland Security memo about the investigation. So, Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, a division of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, got involved in spring 2018. One of the women charged in this operation was Yukin Shu, an immigrant from China in her mid-50s who ran a licensed foot massage business in Bullhead City. Shu's case first came to my attention last fall, which reported that Shu's lawyer was questioning how DHS agents having sex with suspected abuse victims helps protect national security. Quote, it is unclear how an ICE officer having sexual relations with human trafficking victims in Mohave County, Arizona, protects the nation from terrorist attacks or secures the borders, wrote attorney Brad Rideout in a motion seeking the real names of the undercover agents who were identified in police documents only as Arturo and Sergio. I wrote about Shu's case in a larger look at this sordid campaign, Massage Parlor Panic, which Reason published in February. Many of the cases described in my article had failed to gain much media attention, and when they did, it was from outlets basically just transcribing police convoluted and dubious rescue claims. But two of these stories, the 2017 death of Queens-based massage worker Yang Song during a police raid on her workplace, and the 2019 massage parlor stings in Florida that ensnared the New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft, managed to break through the usual fog of sensationalism and bootlicking to attract widespread attention in a way that got people asking good questions. Homeland Security Investigations, which was also a part of the Florida stings, with an undercover agent visiting businesses in Indian River Beach and Orange counties and paying women for sex acts. Following the recent ASU investigation, national and mainstream media have been discovering and disapproving of Operation Asian Touch. Well, yeah, I should hope so. This is great, so long as nobody mistakes what happened in Mohave County for an atypical investigation. If you track initial claims about massage parlor-based human trafficking through to their actual conclusions, you'll almost always find law enforcement simply targeting sex workers, small business owners, immigrants, and the people who patronize them with harassment, assault, arrest, property seizure, persecution, detainment, and deportation. And the victims they allegedly set out to save frequently wind up facing criminal charges. There are only two roles women can play in this Homeland Security-led charade: helpless sex slave or conniving human trafficker. Both types of women are invited to stroke ICE agent penises. Yeah, no kidding. Shu is one of countless Asian immigrant workers or women terrorized by the U.S. government in a nationwide immigration sweep dressed up as a victim-centered effort to save captive girls and women held in modern slavery. Homeland Security perpetuates the rescue narrative and asks people to participate in awareness and surveillance efforts through the Blue Campaign. Many local police departments, including the Bullhead City and Lake Havasu City agencies involved here, ban sexual activity with victims, suspects, or anyone in cop custody. But partnerships with federal agents and confidential informants allows them to circumvent their own policies. An HSI memo on the Mohave County investigation describes instance after instance of an undercover federal agent, UC, telling a masseuse to masturbate him. It includes accounts like the female placed oil on her hand and began to stroke the UC's penis. After a few minutes, the female stopped and gave the UC a towel to clean himself. Or she masturbated the UC until he told her he was done. In several instances, ICE agents paid extra for masseuses to strip naked or go topless while jerking them off. Some HSI incident reports are peppered with descriptions like the female was very skinny with small breasts, or the Asian female had black hair and was wearing a black shirt, black skirt, fishnet stockings, and heels. Not all of the massage workers that ICE agents visited would agree to sex acts. The HSI memos muse that this is probably because the women were on to their agents' identities, and not that some of these workers just chose not to do that. That's funny. In like a really sad way, that like it's built into their assumption, like into their worldview, that, oh, they must have found out I'm an agent, as opposed to like, no, I just do massages, man. I'm not gonna like jerk you off. That's these are the worst people on the planet. ICE agents are the worst human beings on the fucking planet. Like, this is the kind of, this is why, by the way, we advocate so strongly to people who don't get it for ICE to be taken out. This is one of the many reasons why. They are a fraternity of fascist dickheads that just want to abuse their power on immigrants. That's their entire purpose. Whether it was back during the George Bush era, where they were terrorizing anybody who was even remotely from Asia or the Middle East, to now, where they're now terrorizing people from the Middle East, Asia, and also every immigrant they come across. Like, it's... anybody from south of the border is going to be terrorized by the ICE agents. It's disgusting. Anyway, back to the article. After a few months of ICE agents trying to finagle sex from women they described as likely victims of human trafficking, federal and local law enforcement made a big to-do about their rescue work. In a September 2018 article with a headline touting the 8 arrested in human trafficking investigation from the Arizona Republic, and noted that ICE officials, quote, held a joint press conference with the Lake, Havasu City, and Bullhead City Police Departments about the extensive undercover operation that led to the arrests. I mean, why does it even need to be this undercover? Like, the fact that we're going to have to send you in undercover, you're going to need to get jerked off. Like, I mean, it's really, this is some of the dumbest police work. What a waste of tax dollars that they get to send these guys out, get them jerked off, and then arrest everyone involved. Like, I mean, this is beyond disgusting, man. This makes me want to puke. Police told the press that Hsu was suspected of a range of horrible offenses. This included trafficking persons for forced labor, unlawfully obtaining labor, procuring people for a house of prostitution, and sex trafficking, the Arizona Republic reported on September 26. But the next day, when Hsu was charged, none of the more severe offenses were part of the indictment. Ultimately, Hsu was charged with money laundering in the first degree and operating a house of prostitution, both felonies for allegedly agreeing to sexual activity with ICE agents. The affidavit to get a warrant for Hsu's arrest stated that, quote, an undercover agent with the Homeland Security Investigation Team, end quote, went to Hsu's house on 3 separate occasions, May 15th, June 20th, and September 17th, 2018, and paid Hsu to perform sex acts for him, according to Hsu's motion to compel information on the agents. Secrecy about sex with victims trumps catching criminals. Last fall, the Mohave County Superior Court said Homeland Security should indeed have to turn over information about Arturo and Sergio, and that the pair could not be used as witnesses unless the court got their full names and addresses. DHS responded by telling Mohave County Police and prosecutors it would not be participating in the case any further. As a result, in December 2019, prosecutors dismissed all charges against Amanda Yamauchi and Dean Michael Bassett, the pair whom authorities had initially described as the heads of a transnational criminal organization. Either that description was just spin all along, or DHS is willing to let evildoers go free rather than answer questions about its policy of agents getting off on sex trafficking. This story just keeps getting crazier. A few weeks later, on December 30th, the charges against Yu Quin Shu and another woman who had been charged with prostitution were dropped. Ultimately, the operation that consumed years of police, court, and federal agency time landed just three state misdemeanor convictions, all stemming from a single incident of sexual activity for pay. A 45-year-old woman was convicted of prostitution, landing her 56 days in jail and a $600 fine, while the man who paid her was convicted of solicitation. Her husband, who drove her to the massage parlor where this took place, accepted a plea deal on one charge of attempted pandering. The whole thing is, quote, a lesson in how to not to fight human trafficking, end quote, upends the editorial board of today's News Herald, a newspaper covering Lake Havasu City. Homeland Security clearly hopes the whole thing will just go away, they write. Requests for information from the News Herald have gone unanswered by the agency. This is a fascist society, man. ICE spokeswoman Yasmin Pitts O'Keefe told ASU reporters that in Operation Asian Touch, quote, conduct by a limited number of HSI agents involved in the investigation was not consistent with HSI policy, end quote. But that's untrue, says Arizona police. Our understanding of Homeland Security policy is that their investigators are allowed to participate in sex acts while working undercover, end quote. Dan Doyle, police chief for Lake Havasu City, told the News Herald last December. Quote, detectives were informed by HSI that the undercover sexual activity was authorized, end quote. Bullhead Police Department spokeswoman Emily Fromlett told Howard Center reporters. Nothing in Homeland Security rules explicitly bans agents from engaging in sexual activity as part of investigations. Meanwhile, an HSI manual expressly states that otherwise illegal activity is sometimes okay for undercover agents. Possible justifications for such activity are broad, including the need to, quote, establish or maintain credibility of a cover identity or to, quote, obtain information or evidence not reasonably available without participation in the otherwise illegal activity. While these stories are getting more national attention, most big outlets are missing the fact that this whole operation was something of a farce to begin with. An immigration enforcement effort and old-fashioned vice sting under the guise of something more heroic. Some people suggest that federal authorities started off with only the most sincere concerns for the masses' welfare and that things then went awry. If that's the case, they sure have a screwy way of expressing concern. All I see in this case is authorities exploiting people they called sex slaves and then refusing to show up for them when it comes time to seek justice. ICE agents paid potential victims to make them orgasm, then disappeared, while local police misled the press about it, then stole from, quote, victims through the racket known as civil asset forfeiture. HSI Deputy Special Agent in Charge Lon Wiegand said at a press conference that $128,000 in cash and around $30,000 worth of gold coins and jewelry were seized during the operation. According to the ASU's report, most of this $105,120 has not been and will not be returned, despite most of the cases being dismissed. Oh my God. At the 2018 press conference, Lake Havasu City Police Chief Dan Doyle crowed that this investigation is, quote, a great example of see something, say something, end quote, referring to the centerpiece slogan of many Homeland Security efforts, including those related to human trafficking. He's right, of course. The Moy County debacle is a perfect example of how HSI and ICE fight human trafficking and sexual exploitation. That is exactly why Homeland Security sex trafficking savior sham needs to stop. Wow. That's Elizabeth Nolan Brown, who's a senior editor at Reason. That was a great little op-ed there. That's mind-blowing, man. I mean, ICE is one of the most evil organizations on the goddamn planet. Like, it is just a fascist fraternity that feels like they can get away with whatever they want. They are the worst elements of the police hopped up with federal power. So they aren't even, like, accountable to local police. Anybody that, like, they can just come from out of state and fuck up your life. They are the worst parts of the FBI, the CIA, and the police force rolled into one. All of that racism and jingoism and the power trip with dumb fraternity mentality. I mean, it's really a hodgepodge of some of the most awry human behavior you're going to come across. So let's cap out this horrible news list of news articles related to power and our government and the wealthy and all of them basically getting what they want and destroying freedom in the process. Let's go ahead and jump to an exclusive from Reuters. The U.S. considers returning Cuba to list of state sponsors of terrorism. Washington, Reuters. The United States is considering returning Cuba to its list of state sponsors of terrorism, a senior Trump administration official told Reuters on Thursday, a move that would mark another major blow to increasingly tense relations between Washington and Havana. There is a convincing case that Cuba should be placed back on the U.S. blacklist, in part because of its continued backing for socialist Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and the refuge it gives to leaders of Colombia's ELN rebel group, the official said. Speaking on condition of anonymity, the official did not rule out that a decision on Cuba's relisting could come by the end of the year. In what was possibly a preliminary step, the Trump administration said on Wednesday that it had put the communist-ruled island back on a separate list of countries that do not cooperate fully with its efforts to counter terrorism. Havana, which has long denied any link to terrorism, dismissed Wednesday's State Department announcement as spurious. Returning Cuba to the blacklist would be a further rollback of the détente that former President Barack Obama orchestrated between the old Cold War foes. His decision to formally remove Cuba from the terrorism list in 2015 was an important step toward restoring diplomatic ties that year. Trump's toughened stance on Cuba, as well as Venezuela, has gone down well in the large Cuban-American community in South Florida, an important voting bloc and a key political swing state as he seeks re-election in November. Designation by Washington as a state sponsor of terrorism, which carries the potential for sanctions and trade restrictions, would put Cuba in the company of Iran, North Korea, Syria, and Sudan. Ah, the bad boys of the global community, of course. Oh, yeah, yeah. Cuba's role in Venezuela. Any decision to put Cuba back on the list would take into account Havana's support for Maduro, whose 2018 re-election was considered a sham by most Western countries. Yeah, fuck those Western countries. Fuck all of them. Fuck everybody that thought it was a sham. The U.S. government indicted him and much of his inner circle in March on charges of, quote, narco-terrorism, end quote, conspiracy, corruption, and drug trafficking. United States and dozens of other nations recognized opposition leader Juan Guaido as interim president last year. No, you appointed him. You appointed him. The people of the country didn't want him. Like, there's video of him basically getting harassed and heckled just for coming back to the country that you supposedly acknowledge him the ruler of. Like, it was the coup that never could happen because he was such an unlikable douche. Oh, yeah, yeah. But Maduro, who calls Guaido a U.S. puppet and is correct, remains in power, backed by Venezuelan military as well as Russia, China, Cuba, and Iran. Some U.S. officials have said privately that this has been a growing source of frustration for Trump. Good. I'm happy to hear that. The senior official said the U.S. government was also considering designating several of Venezuela's security services as terrorist organizations, in part for alleged links to drug trafficking. Those include the National Intelligence Service, the Military Counterintelligence Agency, and Elite Police Unit, in addition to paramilitary groups loyal to Maduro. The deliberations on whether to relist Cuba are focused heavily on legal questions required to justify naming a country a sponsor of terrorism, the official said. Also figuring into the discussions is Cuba's refusal of Colombia's request to extradite ELN leaders after the group claimed responsibility for an attack at a Bogota police academy in January 2019 that killed 22. The leaders of the National Liberation Army, ELN, the largest active guerrilla group in Colombia, traveled to Havana as part of peace negotiations that collapsed last year after the car bomb attack. Cuba has received broad plaudits in the past for hosting the successful peace talks between the Colombian government and the former FARC rebel army. Another issue expected to weigh on Washington's decision is Cuba's harboring of several U.S. fugitives, some of whom have lived on the island for decades. A relisting of Cuba would have heavy symbolic meaning for Havana, which had chafed for decades under the U.S. designation. It is unclear, however, how much practical impact there would be. The designation carries a prohibition on U.S. economic aid, a ban on U.S. arms exports, controls on dual-use items with military and civilian applications, and a requirement that the United States oppose loans to Cuba by international financial institutions such as the World Bank and International Money Fund, IMF. But many of those restrictions are already in place or have been tightened by Trump, and a decades-old U.S. economic embargo remains and can only be lifted by Congress. So that was Matt Spetelnik, and official reporting by Sarah Marsh in Havana. So again, I mean, that, you know, that's pretty gross, I would say. It's unfortunate. It's bad news. I enjoy it when the powers that be are pissed that these tiny, far less wealthy countries like Cuba and Venezuela, they have wealth, but far less wealthy than the United States. When these tiny countries manage to, like, rustle the jimmies of the world's most powerful nation of an empire, I get some pleasure out of that. It's horrible that we're doing this. I wish we could stop it. And I hate the fact that this power that our government has been able to amass allows them to do it with no oversight. I hate all this stuff. But there are some strange, weird pockets of resistance in the world, like Cuba and Venezuela, that are not perfect and have their own human rights flaws and faults. But we have plenty of human rights flaws and faults. A lot of people could claim that what we're doing during this coronavirus is a human rights violation, frankly. Joe Kennedy, of course, spoke up on the human rights violations of the United States and said something to the effect that there is no reason why anyone in the United States should go bankrupt from this crisis without a lawyer at their side. Which, again, it almost sounds like a good idea. You're almost like, yeah, no one should go bankrupt. And they go, unless you've got someone next to you to guide you through the process. What? No one should just go bankrupt. Medicine should just be free, man. That's the only thing that, I mean, he's such a bad Democrat. The stupidity of this guy voting for nuclear weapons and making as dumb a claim as that, basically saying it's okay if you go bankrupt as long as you have someone there to help file your paperwork for you. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Our government is shit. The people in it are rich, old money oligarchs, and they refuse to let us change their system. So yeah, I am quickly becoming anti-electoral, frankly. I'm quickly becoming a guy that does not believe we can win this through voting because of how depressing it is to see just the powers that be close themselves off from oversight. And I would say likely cheat the system, you know, cheat the voters through a variety of methods. You know, the Massachusetts primary, I think, showed pretty heavy evidence due to its divergence from the exit polls. And I've covered this in a previous episode, but the exit polls diverged greater than 8 points, which is at past four, we say the election is fraudulent. It did that for the Democratic primary, it passed 8 points. But incidentally, for the Republican primary, it was dead on. The Republican numbers, exit polls lined up exactly with what happened. You know, so the exit polling coming out of states like Massachusetts that can diverge so greatly that if it was a country like South America, like Venezuela, we would invade or authorize an invasion because the election would be considered fraudulent. We can have that here in this state, or not in this state, but in this country, and nothing is done about it. It's just considered normal. Our corrupt media just sort of bakes that into the pie. Like, yeah, you know, it happened. And we're not going to ask why it happened. It just happened. We're not going to investigate it. Why would we investigate it? It happened. Biden won. No polling showed him winning in Massachusetts. He won. That's what happened. I mean, it's depressing. But I feel like if you're making them show their asses to this degree, if you're making them show their corruption to this degree, there has to be that something has to be signified because of that. That has to be a problem in and of itself, right? Like, that has to be proof that change is at least possible. Because now, like, not through electoralism, sure, but now we have this situation where our elites are just not allowing our government to function, even with the few components of democracy that were ostensibly there. They're fucking with them in every way that they can. That has to signify that something is about to give somewhere, right? But again, it comes down to a critical mass of people. You know, socialists have been crying for years that things need to change, that this is ridiculous, that we need to band together to fight the economic overlords of this world. But it's not been something that we've been able to get a critical mass for. So I can only hope, and I thought we had the critical mass with Bernie. I can only hope we will get the critical mass as a result of this pandemic, so at least some good comes out of it. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Sociable Socialism. I'm Joe Loud Guy. Have a good evening and stay healthy out there, guys.